You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Repack, presented by Acme Packing Company. I'm Justice Mosqueda, joined here by Evan Tex Western. Say what's up to people, Tex.
What's up, everybody? It's a good night. The Packers beat the Bears. It's always a good day when the Packers beat the Bears. And the Packers beat the Bears to take the all-time lead and wins. So that was fun to get that tiebreaker. Yeah, let's hang the banner for this one this year, right? Hey.
The Bears fans are, like, mad about it. They're like, I can't believe you care. You beat a 3-win Bears team. It's like, oh, we beat a lot of Bears teams, actually. Yep. And this documents that we've beat a lot of Bears teams.
So. I'm just saying, we haven't not beaten Bears teams in, like, 4 years or something like that. So yeah, that's just copium from the Bears fans.
Oh, man. This game looks a lot closer than the score was. You know, if you're just watching the box score, I'm a person who had to miss parts of this game. I was on the inactive list for a good portion of this game. Ended up going back and watching it, and it was just really tight. It came down to a Jair pick when they crossed the 50, and then Keyshawn Nixon interception, you know, basically in the red zone. So it could have been a lot different. It's nice to have a defense that can cause turnovers now. Wow.
Yeah, that was actually something I mentioned at the halftime Twitter spaces that we did was the only stop the Packers got in the first half was off a turnover, the fumble that Rasul Douglas forced. Mm-hmm. And I said at that point, like, it feels like the Packers absolutely have to force a turnover or two in the second half if they're going to win this game. You know, being down by 6, obviously, thankfully, getting that touchdown from Watson to get within a score before the half was huge. But it just felt like the Bears were doing just about anything they wanted to on offense. Now, they came out in their first drive, they had a 3-and-out, but that was really the only true stop that the Packers got, because every other drive that the Bears had, at least the only stop they got not via turnover, right? Bears had a field goal, then they had the missed field goal in the second half before the two picks. So, you know, basically every drive aside from that one 3-and-out that didn't end in a turnover ended at least in a solid scoring opportunity for Chicago.
Yeah, if you look at the total yards, right? So they edged out Green Bay by about 50. They had 409 total yards of just offense. And then you look at the yards per play, 8.2 compared to 5.7. I mean, the Bears were getting 2.5 more yards per play over the entire course of the game. The only other time that I've seen this defense kind of make those opportunistic turnovers where it's, okay, you cross the 50, now I'm taking the ball away from you, and it's, you know, saving both the offense's ass and the defense's ass, was that Buccaneers game. That's the only other game that I can remember this year where it's like the defense came up big when it mattered. It wasn't just, you know, we shut them down. It's like, yeah, they can move the ball, but we're going to get ours too. So that was nice to see. I mean, turnovers have been hard to come by this year. And if you watch some of the defenders play, it's not too surprising. Devondre Campbell is playing with a backpack full of lead on.
Oh my gosh.
That long touchdown that Fields had, or I don't can't remember, I think it was a touchdown.
Yep. Yeah.
Dude, what the hell is that?
Baseball fans, especially NL Central fans, he looked like Yadier Molina trying to go from first to third on like a single to the outfield. Like it just unhitch your wagon, man. Get moving. Good Lord.
That was weird. And then it was a really uncharacteristic Jair game, right? I mean, he allowed explosives to ESB and Keel Harry. He ended up getting the pick at the end. He called Equanimee St. Brown a bum, if I remember correctly. I think that was his verbiage.
Yeah. I want to know. I gotta go watch that back and see if he was like, if he said that in a joking mood because they were old teammates or what exactly happened there. But that was pretty funny from Jai after the game. But just, yeah, you don't expect him to get beaten over the top, and you sure as hell don't expect him to get beaten over the top twice in one game by guys like guys EQ who are just and available. Harry. Yeah. Exactly. Oy.
What the hell is going on with Josh? I mean, that was – it felt early on in the game. Like, you watch it, and it's like, did the defense quit? Are we just mm-hmm. done on defense? And then, you know, the spark comes in the second half. But, like, Jaw's one of those guys where – I know we talked about the regression of – and Kenny Clark had a better game than he's probably yep. had, you know, the past month and a half. He was a guy that we talked about, you know, not getting the most out of him right now. You know, Campbell, you know, clearly is a guy that's probably regressed. We talked about Adrian Amos all season. But, like, Jaw is a guy that, like, I don't know. He's given up more plays than he usually does.
Not living up to that that huge contract that he signed. And I know I saw that was his fourth pick this year, which I think is a career high, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, that actually three was his career high before even coming in before today. So I don't know if it's just a matter of teams are more willing to throw at him. Mm-hmm. And he is, you know, making a few plays here and there, but certainly it seems like he's given up more big plays this season than he has in the past, which is strange and somewhat concerning. But yeah, it's just it's been a weird season all around, but I feel like it's hard for, you know, it'd be hard for you to say that he's living up to that giant contract he just signed, at least in the first year of it so far.
Yeah. It's going to be, I mean, I talked with Brad Spielberger on the preview show on Friday. They're going to have a lot of big decisions coming up with some of these contracts. And, you know, Rodgers after the game kind of made it sound like it's weird because he had the thing last week where he said something that was like, you assume things are going to be the same next year. And it was like, what does that mean? And then after the presser today, he was basically saying, like, you know, it has to be a mutual agreement that I come back. Right. So I don't know what his head is at. Like, he just signed the deal. Again, we've been talking about how he holds the big red button. We've just been calling it the big red button. Like, if you want to come back, you're probably going to come back. Like, I don't see a scenario where the team just says, Aaron, we're moving you. Aaron, retire. I just can't see it right now.
No. And the only possible way to do it financially is if they get to June 1st and decide they want to trade him after that point. You can manage the cap that way a little bit and at least, you know, not kill yourself on the cap. And you're spreading out that dead hit over the next 2 years. But even at that point, you have to get to June 1st and be cap solvent to be able to do that in the first place. So,
I mean, I mean, you're passing free agency, you're passing the draft, all those things, like those kind of, you need to have your ducks in order, whatever you end up doing. So I don't know. And then a lot of it too, is like people talk about like, oh, what if, you know, Rodgers drops his salary number down to the minimum so that they can do all this stuff post June 1st, all that. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, this dude asked for like $60 million. He held, you know, right or wrong, he held the team hostage for a bit, right? Like, do you think he'd do that? Like, you think he's just going to allow for like an easy transition? I don't think so. Like, he doesn't want Jordan Love getting snaps right now. Right? Like,
yeah. I do wonder how much of that for this week, right? It is, if it wasn't the Bears and if it wasn't, you know, that little historical nugget about taking the all-time wins lead over Chicago, I wonder how much he would have really pushed to play. We know how much he loves history and legacy and twisting the knife with Bears fans. So I do still think that probably played at least somewhat of a factor. But now you look ahead now, Packers have a bye, figure those ribs can heal up some. And then they get on Monday night, they get a Rams team that's got no Aaron Donald, no Matthew Stafford. Like, that looks like a very winnable game for this Packers team. And now you're sitting, you know, certainly Rodgers will want to play in that with the Packers still at least having a theoretical chance at making the postseason. So now you're probably down to a maximum of three games of Jordan Love. When again, we know we need to, we need to see what this guy can do to know if there's any possibility or any realistic reason to exercise that fifth year option this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers, what was it, 2 weeks ago, he mentioned, you know, as long as they are mathematically in the playoff hunt, he wants to be out there playing. And then, you know, we'll have a discussion after that. And then LaFleur was mentioned, like, that Monday, you know, that hasn't even come up. Like, we're not even thinking about that right now, is what he kind of said. If you look at, like, the mathematical elimination, I was playing around with this on 538 today. If the Packers are playing on the morning of that Sunday in week 17, like, they're still in the playoff hunt. It's going to be really hard for them to be eliminated before the last week of the season. So we're talking about maybe one game of Jordan Love, if that's even the scenario, if that's even how Rodgers kind of wants this thing to end. So yeah. As far as the, like, the in the hunt graphics, the Packers are going to be in the hunt graphics for another month. Like, that's just kind of the situation in the NFC right now. As long as the teams that are expected to win continue winning, that's kind of where they're going to be at.
Yeah. Well, and now is as good a time as any to talk about this. I was kind of following a little bit of the playoff odds throughout the game today, and obviously, with the Packers winning, that helps a little bit. But one of the things that really hurt Green Bay today in the playoff odds was the tie between the Giants and the Commies. Basically, the Packers needed one of those two teams to tank and practically lose out. Right? They've got to find a way to get ahead of them on a tiebreaker. Since both of those teams have the tiebreaker over Green Bay, right? And with both of those tying, now you don't add a loss to the loss column for either one of those. And I was playing with 538 too. If either team had won, the Packers playoff odds would have stayed at 6%. With that tie, the Packers playoff odds dropped to 4% because of that tie. So they really needed one of those two teams to sweep the head-to-head games that those two have in the next 3 weeks. And that tie really ends up actually screwing the Packers over a little bit.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of numbers out there right now about the Packers playoff odds. I don't know necessarily what the difference between some of these models are. I would assume it's their belief in the Giants and Commanders in terms of, like, them in a power ranking standpoint, right? That's what makes the most sense to me for the variation for Green Bay. But, like, The Athletic, Austin Mock, who does their playoff model stuff, he had them entering with 6% for this weekend, and then with the win going up to 11.5, which is vastly different from you know what 538 has right now. 538 has it. So if the Packers win out, right, they get the Rams. They have to play in Miami on Christmas, right? Minnesota, I believe that's New Year's Day, and then Detroit in Week 18, and who knows what the heck's going to happen for that. If they win out, there's a 40% chance that they make the playoffs. That's if they go 4-0 for the rest of the season, end up finishing at 9-8. So I think coming into this week, it was a little higher than that. It was like 43% or 42%. I remember seeing that number early on in the week. But they still need a lot of outside help. I mean, even beyond, you know, we talk about New York and we talk about the Commies, right? But the other team that's, you know, in the mix is Seattle.
Yep.
Seattle is just hanging around right now. They're 7-5, right? They get three more wins. They don't even need to go to a tiebreaker with the Packers, right? So yep. If they can do that, that'd be a huge one.
For sure. Yeah, it's two of those three teams have to drop out, and the Packers have to catch two of them in order to.
The other one is like, the Niners are on a third string quarterback now. What if they just don't win any more games? I mean, that's a scenario where, you know, Green Bay would jump them in terms of the playoff order, because they're at 9 wins. If the Niners don't win another game with who is it? Brock Purdy?
Brock Purdy.
That guy's not an NFL quarterback. So yeah, we'll see what that looks like long term. I know he was able to pull it off against you know, the Dolphins, but the Dolphins have like a historically bad defense. The one caveat there, though, is we have seen Shanahan get away with some terrible. I mean, he won games with Nick Mullen and CJ Beathard, and he would just not let them run like actual drop back passing game. He was just like, we're running the piss out of the ball and we're gonna run boots, and that's it. So
when
he'll probably win one or two.
Yeah. And when you've got guys who can make plays after the catch like they do, that takes a lot of pressure off your quarterback. But I'm just looking at the 49ers schedule down the stretch. Home for Tampa Bay next week. Then they've got at Seattle and home for Washington. Again, two teams that also the Packers need to drop games. So you've got to have, again, it's either Seattle or San Francisco tanks. And then again, one of Washington or the Giants, just goes down the drain. So that's the scenario, folks. Cheer for the all four of those teams to start losing, and hopefully in the next week or two we'll know which ones we really really need to pull for a nice long losing streak here at the end.
Yeah,
if you're on playoff train, right?
that's the
other question. Caveat. Yeah,
I think what is it? I'm pulling it up right now because the reacts, the polls that we have on the site that we do every week. I asked the fan base, you know, Jordan Love or Aaron Rodgers, right? 83% of the fans said that they want to see, you know, Jordan Love start games. And then I asked about draft position or a playoff spot. 72% said, you know, focus on draft position. So I think most of the fan base is post competing probably for this season.
Yeah.
I don't think the team is, though. I mean, Rodgers just wants to fight tooth and nail. And the one thing that he mentioned too in that little speech about, you know, it has to be a mutual thing and all that stuff, he was talking about Christian Watson. He's like, this is awesome to see. He's like, you know, if I would have stayed at Cal, I could have played with DeSean Jackson and Marshawn Lynch for another season. Like, I don't know. Maybe this breakout from Christian Watson, what, 8 touchdowns in 4 games is what ends up bringing him back. I mean, we haven't even seen Dobbs on the field. Dobbs was probably, I thought we were going to see Dobbs this week.
Yep.
Coming off that high ankle sprain and all that stuff. And he was in practice all week, even though he was limited. So I assumed him and Devondre were going to come back. It ended up only being Devondre. So who knows what healthy Dobbs, healthy Christian Watson, both with confidence, just Aaron Rodgers, you know, actually being able to go under center on like that, like 2 week stretch. Like who knows what that offense looks like, but
yeah.
They've been able to put up points recently. I mean, what, three of their best performances just in terms of points have come in the last month. So that's a good sign. I mean, it's not great that the Bears can just do whatever they want to your defense, but at least we can get the ball moving on O now.
Right. Well, and again, Watson's the big change in those last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And a huge reason why they were able to put up 28 in 3 of the last 4.
And Stenovich, they even asked Stenovich about it this week. And they were like, is it just the fact that like he's fast and he's confident? Is that the difference between the offense before and after? And he's like, to be honest, yeah. So that's interesting. Really? That was it? Okay. All right.
So sometimes it really is that simple. And like it makes you wonder a couple of those games where he left, you know, that Lions game. If Watson's out there for that whole game, the Packers win that game? Maybe, probably.
Yeah,
probably. If he's, you know, if this version of Christian Watson is healthy and playing, you know, with this amount of confidence this entire season, how many wins does this team have? Is this an 8-5 team instead of a 5-8 team? I don't think that's insane. It's a bummer to think back at what could have been if he were actually healthy this whole season, because you got to feel like that Giants game would have been winnable. You know, the Commies game, maybe the Lions game. I mean, those are three that he could have maybe, you know, made a big difference in if he were fully healthy and able to go and a full part of the offense. So, I mean, it's great to see him breaking out and delivering on, you know, all the talent that he's gotten and the pure ability and athleticism that he has. But it is just amazing to see how much faster he is than everybody else on the field,
dude. The end around or whatever it was, like
that one. I mean,
the guy had the angle. The guy had the angle. He just ran past it,
and that was the same way with the crossing route last week that he took for a touchdown. It's just you get him in space, he's going to get to the corner and he's going to beat you to the edge and get up the sideline. And once he gets past your last guy, there's no chance in hell you were catching him. So Packers haven't had that level of speed with versatility, right? That you know, MVS was a burner, but it's a, I feel like that's a different kind of speed in a way. Yeah.
He was a long strider, like deep right. guy, like Watson. You can, I mean, they weren't running end arounds to MVS, right? Like that's the difference.
Yep.
This is how fast Watson is. The 2 minute warning. This is a tweet from Bill Huber. At the 2 minute warning, Aaron Rodgers asked Coach Matt LaFleur if Packers rookie Christian Watson should go down or score a touchdown. That was for the end around play, and then Sammy Watkins celebrated with Watson at the 40. So that's how fast they are. They're like, should we score here or should we kneel down? And it's like, goodness gracious. I mean,
wow,
it is really fun. I missed most of Twitter during the game. I did see people found my old Christian Watson tweets.
Oh, they found one of mine too.
That was fun to read through.
Yeah.
Dude, guys, he's doing good. I'm very happy for him. Like,
I'm down now. Look, I'm happy, and I'm happy that I was wrong about him not being worth a first round pick. Yeah. Like, I'll take the L. I'll take the L if it gives the Packers, you know, a receiver like this who's got this type of ability, man. I don't care.
Yeah. Matter of fact, let's do it again this offseason.
Yeah.
Let's do it again this offseason.
Absolutely.
Rodgers' rib looked fine. Am I wrong?
Yeah. I didn't see anything.
He was moving around. There was like one play on a broken play. He like did like a 360 and was still able to throw. Like, I don't think his rib is that big of a deal. I think the thumb is still probably bothering him when it gets hit. But
yeah,
if it doesn't get hit, I mean, he looks like Aaron Rodgers right now.
Well, and he didn't get hit a whole lot in this game. Bears pass rush did little to nothing. Let me see how many hits they actually had on Rodgers in this game. Bears were credited with zero quarterback hits in this game in the official box score. That's incredible.
And that's with David Bakhtiari out because he had an emergency appendectomy on Friday, which is crazy. I was wondering, they took so long to announce the inactives on Friday, and I was like, the hell's going on here? And then it lasted like an hour, and then it's just they don't even release the injury report. They didn't release the injury report. They were just like, oh, yeah, David Bakhtiari had an appendectomy. He's not going to be playing this week. Then 20 minutes later, they released the injury report. I was like, what?
God.
What kind of a Friday news dump is this?
Like, look, I guess if you're gonna pick a week to do it, a week against a Bears team that has no NFL pass rushers right before a bye week, I guess is the right time to do it.
And hopefully Bakhtiari will be all right by the time they go against the Rams. It felt like in this game, just the last thing I want to do before we get into like vibe checks, this game was weird because it seemed like they wanted to throw to Cobb in big moments and he just couldn't come down with a couple of them, like especially in the red zone. I don't know. This isn't Cobb's team. Like, I feel like this should be the passing of the torch moment, right?
Yep.
Where the offense up until this point was like third down, we need a big play. Randall Cobb is the dude. It's time. This is Christian Watson's team now.
Move on. Yeah, 0 for 4 on targets for Cobb in this game.
And two of them could have been for scores. Like,
it
mattered. I mean, the Packers were kicking field goals for a decent amount of this game, too.
Yep. Pass the torch.
All right. Let's get into vibe checks after the break.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back." If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
And we're back. All right, let's talk about the offense. The run game, still as good as ever. I did like that like Mark Schlereth was able to bring it up during the game. You know, Mark is former offensive lineman, all that stuff. He was like, they have the most unique gun run offense you know, in the league right now. And I really do agree. I mean, the fact that they're, one, they're doing all the pin and pull stuff, which is increasing league-wide, but the Packers are probably a good, like, if you're looking at the league-wide average, they're probably bringing those percentage points up just by themselves, you know? And then it's not just that they're doing pin and pull. It's they have all this stuff built off the backside runs, all those weak side runs where they can just, like, pitch it to the edge really quick, and it's just Aaron Jones out there. And that's a Pro Bowler, man. That really is. I think he's the only one on this team. I don't think Christian Watson's getting in. It's just – The way they do Pro Bowl voting and the fact that, like, it opens midseason, like, there's just no chance for him, I don't think. Maybe he can get a look at some of these, like, offensive rookie of the year things. But I think Aaron Jones is the most important person on this offense, even though Christian Watson is scoring all these touchdowns.
Yeah, it was interesting with Jones today, too, because it seemed like he kept going in and out of the lineup with that shin issue. Yeah. And because of that, Dylan got probably his biggest workload of the year. And I thought Dylan looked really solid in this game. 18 for 93 in a score, had another 20-yard touchdown. That touchdown, by the way, was a thing of beauty. Again, that was one where you could see the Bears respecting Watson's speed because he comes around from left to right on a fake jet sweep. And then they take Dylan back off the left end. And he's got a lot of room there. And I think a Sammy Watson or a Watkins block on that run too.
Yeah. Watkins, it looked like Watkins was actually playing this game. Cause I know, you know, his snap count has been tanking in recent weeks. And we thought he was going to be kind of phased out entirely whenever Dobbs comes back, but he was getting in on some of these plays. It seems like they're playing him beyond just the X, because it's really the way that they used to do it. It was like Watson or Watkins is on the field. Now they're getting on the field together sometimes. It was nice to see, you know, that gut punch recovery, right? I mean, 16-3 felt like the defense was just checked out, right? I mean, 2 weeks ago, what was it? Russell Douglas was talking about, like, if we lose another game, we might as well just, like, start planning vacations in January. And kind of looked like, you know, for a little bit, like, the defense was already in that mode. They ended up coming big with some big, you know, turnovers. But the offense was able to keep up with it. I just still don't really know what this team is supposed to be in the playoffs, though. Like, can this team win a playoff game? I don't even think so. Like, I think the point of the season is just developmental reps at this point. Like, I'm not looking for, like, if they make it as the seventh seed in the NFC, we're going to get smashed. We're going to get smushed.
Well, and you're going to be facing probably Minnesota if you're the seventh seed going up against the two in the first round. And that's the only reason why I think this team actually has a chance to win a playoff game, because I still don't think Minnesota is actually very good. They won
Mike White outplayed Kirk Cousins, even though they both played terribly.
They did. And then it took a blatant terrible drop by Braxton Berrios in the end zone that should have gone for the winning score for Minnesota to win that game again. So I don't know how many more games they can win because the other team just, you know, trips over their own dick. but it's been a lot this season. And I actually, you know, we'll learn a little bit more in week 17 when these two teams play each other. But as of right now, the call me crazy, but I think this team can beat the Vikings even in US Bank. And if in fact, I think that might be a better place for them because they can actually take advantage of Watson's speed a little bit more on the turf at US Bank Stadium. So if you're asking me, can this team win a playoff game? I think they can. If you're asking me if this team is a you know, NFC Championship Super Bowl caliber team, no, absolutely not. But if they can get lucky on a couple of turnovers again on defense, I think that's going to be the key to determining if this team can actually make a run, get into the playoffs, and then, you know, make any noise when they get there.
Yeah, and it was brought up a lot, but like the Justin Jefferson stuff isn't going to keep happening. I mean, how many times have the Packers been completely dominated by a wide receiver like that this season? Right. I mean, it hasn't happened very much. I know, like I'm thinking of like big burner plays, like, okay, Treylon Burks got that one against Ja, right? Like, okay. But that wasn't who he was the entire game. Terry McLaurin got another one on Jair Alexander. That stuff's just going to happen, but it wasn't like, dudes are running butt naked wide open on crossing routes. They're messing up their assignments and stuff in the same way that it was that week one. So yeah. I just think they're way different teams. I mean, you almost do have to kind of throw out the first like two-ish games of the season when teams are just kind of figuring out who the heck they can even be and what they can even do on the field. Like even remember that Tampa Bay game, right? Where Roger, I mean, all they're doing is running this split back gun motion bubble stuff. And the Buccaneers are like, we can stop this. Do you understand we have an answer for this? And then the Packers have to completely change their offense. Like, there's only so much that you can kind of project forward using some of those games. So the one thing that always surprises me about the Vikings is you look at them, and I understand a lot of those guys in the secondary are hurt or banged up or just not playing well. But that defense is so bad for a team that has Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter rushing the passer. I mean, they should be better. They should be better.
Yeah, I don't know what to chalk it up to, but no, as far as, I mean, if we want to get back to vibe checks on offense, I mean, I'm feeling like a 7.5, like the run game worked. Christian Watson has really, you know, unlocked a dimension to this offense that it did not have a month ago. And like I said, I think this is a team that if they get a couple of breaks on the other side of the ball, this offense can, you know, can put up mid 20s, you know, can maybe crack 30 against a decent ish defense. So I'm feeling pretty good where we're at. And especially again, after the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm probably there right with you. The other thing I wanted to mention, Zach Tom, pretty good game, pretty good game by him. That's an interesting one. Cause it's like, I don't know, like, we could replace Elton with him and save like $18 million a year. It's probably we're thinking about.
He just needs to put on about 20 pounds in the offseason to move inside, I think. But
if they keep Elton, I want Zach Tom to get some center snaps next year in training camp. Because that's the weakest spot on the offensive line, I think, is Josh Myers. And I know he was a second round pick and all that stuff, but I don't know. Add some competition. Royce Freeman was a fourth round pick and we just benched his ass in the second year. So
yeah, the Elton extension thing is going to be fascinating just because again, with where the Packers may or may not sit for the cap next year. I saw something this morning or yesterday that they're talking about a salary cap around 220, 225 million, which Packers are still over that for next year. So, they're obviously going to have to move a lot of stuff around. And the crazy stuff is things like Kenny Clark's got a $24 million cap hit next year.
Yeah.
That's the easy one. Jair has a $20 million cap hit. Jair's got and both of those guys, you can convert a lot of that money into signing bonus and keep spreading it out and keep kicking the can. If you think that this is a team that can compete. So, yeah, if you're looking for a path to cap solvency, Clark, Alexander, you could even do it with Aaron Jones if you think you can keep him. He's got, you know, probably almost $15 million you can keep spreading out, just knowing that, you know, he's probably not going to be around for more than one or two more years. So there's things they can do to keep moving that cap money down the road. and you know, maybe they can get a you know, get an Elton extension in there. We'll see.
So this is kind of off topic a little bit, but so recently I've been watching these draft prospects, right? This is kind of the first week I've really kind of just like gone in deep on some of these guys. So like I watched the Tech edge rusher. I watched the Northwestern tackle, who apparently is Skoronski, I think is his name. He's got a family member in the Packers Hall of Fame. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Bob Skoronski was the left tackle back in the Lombardi days.
That kid is good too. I mean, he might end up having to play guard at this level, but he's a pretty good player. I watched Quentin Johnston. I watched the quarterbacks. When I'm watching the quarterbacks, man, so Stroud, I think he's just all right. I think he's in like that Kirk Cousins tier of quarterback.
Yeah.
Levis is, I think it's just the Daniel Jones narrative all over again. It's like this guy had, like, he doesn't have the elite traits. He's not Mahomes. He's not Josh Allen. He's not that level, but, you know, he's got pretty good traits. He comes from an NFL style system. You know, he gets all the excuses of like what was kind of surrounding him, but he didn't put up great numbers. Bryce Young is the guy that I like, the kid from Bama, even though he's on the smaller side. I was thinking about it from this perspective and like, where would Jordan, this version of Jordan Love, 24-year-old Jordan Love, go in the draft? He might be QB2.
Yeah.
And if you're thinking about it that way, like, I don't know, don't you tag him just in case? Like, you pick up the fifth-year option, don't you do that just in case someone wants to trade something for him? Like, I don't know. I don't know. I think after the way that he played, and I know it's only 9 snaps, but like, we saw in the San Francisco game in the preseason, everyone keeps saying, you know, he's looking great in practice. Devondre Campbell said he's a better quarterback than most of the starters in the league. Like, at a certain point, don't you at least like do the Jimmy Garoppolo thing and use him as trade bait?
You know, that's a great point. And you can wait to make that decision on his option until after the draft. It's not until about 2 weeks after that you have to make that call.
Yeah, because it's not going to impact next year's cap space. It's not going to impact next year's cap space. It would be 2024.
So you can feasibly, if you find a partner on draft weekend and trade him for a pick or two, and then they can decide to make the call on his fifth-year option, you know, that following week or something. I guess that's the other argument, right? For as soon as they're done, right? As soon as they're done, get him out there, get him putting some good stuff on tape, and maybe. Yeah, maybe that boosts his trade value and you can get something for him on draft weekend. And then that problem has, to some extent, solved itself at that point.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with that situation because
yeah,
I really don't think – yeah, I think you want to move Love and his option. I don't think you want Love playing on the option.
No.
And I don't think it's just not feasible to keep this thing – going. Like, they obviously have two guys with potential. There's one football. They can't get both of them enough reps. Like, call it a day and get some of these picks moving. Because I think, again, this quarterback class is not great. And next year, it looks like there's probably two, but they're probably going to get picked in the top two picks, right? So, like, if a team doesn't want to tank 2023 to get a shot at a rookie quarterback in 2024, so that he could develop by 2025. I mean, that's a long path you have to take to have a starting caliber quarterback. Like, just find someone who wants Jordan Love. I'm sure they could find someone. Like, it's not who quarterbacks get moved all the time. The only quarterback that hasn't found a trade market was when Jimmy Garoppolo was on that crazy contract this offseason. That was it. Yeah. That's the only guy who sat. I mean, Sam Bradford got traded for a first when he was a backup. Like, come on. You can find something.
You're telling me that a team like the Saints, right? They're sitting there with Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston. You know, Houston, I don't know. I mean, well, Houston will be in the market for a, you know, a top two guy anyway. But yeah, there's any number of teams that could use a guy like Love. And I think that's probably his best scenario at this point is a draft day trade where he can go out there and compete and probably win a starting job. That team hopefully picks up a fifth year option for him, and then the Packers get something back for him, and you know, knowing that Rodgers is in all likelihood coming back. So I like that. I like that approach. I think that makes a lot of sense. And the more good tape he can put up there these last 5-6 weeks of the season, the more likely that's going to be.
I think I'm working this out through my head right now. Teams that I think Jordan Love could start on, right? And this is just in terms of the draft order moving up and down. I'm not putting him in any particular order besides that. The Houston Texans, I think he would start there.
Yep.
Detroit, I think, is at least a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The contract for Goff probably, you know, leads that conversation more than anything. Carolina, I think Arizona, there's potential that Kyler Murray is legitimately moved this offseason. The way that contract is structured, they can trade him. They can't cut him, but they could trade him away based off of kind of how the salary bonus is set up. I know, I can't remember if I talked about it on here, but, you know, Sean Payton was poking around at the Cardinals opening, or not opening, but the potential of a Cardinals opening and the potential of a Chargers opening. It sounds like if he takes the Cardinals job, he doesn't want Kyler Murray there. So that's worth keeping in mind. The Indianapolis Colts, Atlanta, depending on how they feel about Desmond Ridder, I would probably take Jordan Love over him, but, you know, who knows how invested they are there. The Steelers, I think, I don't think they would do it, but I think Jordan Love is a better quarterback there. I think New England has a shot. I think Washington has a shot. The Jets, I don't think that they would do it, but the Jets is another team that I would throw up on that list.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking about all these open seats, right, in the game of musical chairs, and there's at most 3 first-round quarterbacks, I think, in this upcoming draft class, unless someone buys into Anthony Richardson, which is kind of the X factor, I guess. Jordan Love can fill one of those seats.
If a team offers you on draft weekend a second-round pick for Jordan Love, you take that without hesitation, right?
I think so, because he's going to play. The second-round pick is going to play. Jordan Love is on a one-year contract, and that's nothing against him. I think you do the New England thing, and you're like, I'm going to try to listen to the best offer, and I'll take whatever I can get. Just try to find him a good home and – you know, get some draft compensation for it, because it's clear he's outgrown career backup. He simply has. It's time to move on, I think. Defensive vibe checks still pretty bad. You mentioned the things, you know, Kenny Clark trending up. Jair's a roller coaster right now. Devondre Campbell, I mean, he is coming off of the knee injury, but he didn't look good before the knee injury. I mean, I just need Campbell to do something this year to make me think that he's going to be better in 2023. That's where I'm at. It's like, someone, who is it? Archon was like, he stopped working out once he got paid. I don't know if that's the situation. I mean, I believe he's still a team captain. You know, he's the green dot.
Yeah.
Like, seems like they do kind of put a lot of trust in him in terms of that leadership role, which would surprise me if, you know, he kind of just called it right and it's just kind of getting paid, but it's not looking good. And now you get all the regrets of like, oh yeah, you paid the guy who never did that in his career before, and now he's a 28-year-old, had a breakout year, you paid him, and of course that's not going to meet up to expectation. I need that contract to meet up to expectation.
Or at least come close to it, right?
He doesn't need to be first team all pro. I just don't want the team, you know, missing all these damn tackles. The other weird thing too is Chris Barnes started for Devondre Campbell last week.
Yeah.
He's a healthy scratch today. Uh-huh. What the hell was happening there? I mean, they were rotating him with Isaiah McDuffie, but Barnes, he's had a hand injury, but he's been practicing. They didn't give him a status on Friday. So I don't know what the heck happened there, but their linebacker room has been a mess the entire time that Barry's been there. Cause even last year when they had Campbell, right, they were doing all the weird shit where it was like, we got to rotate in, you know, Jalen Smith as the nickel inside linebacker because Chris Barnes can't do it. And it's just like, the hell is going on? They're rotating two guys against the Eagles. Their starter comes back. He doesn't look any better.
Yep.
What the hell?
Yeah. The one encouraging thing I saw from that unit today was when Quay Walker made a play on Justin Fields getting to the edge and beating him to the sideline and taking him down for a gain of like a yard on a scramble. So that was like the one encouraging sign from that particular unit. And that was, I feel like, that was on that first three and out, I think, of the second half. And that was when you started actually seeing the defense show a little bit of emotion and act like they cared a little bit about this game. So, cause that, I think that came right after a big, Kenny Clark stop on the run in the first down. And so there was some encouraging signs on that drive, but you know, I kind of said it all season. Walker looks great when he can just chase the football and not have to think and not have to try to fit. When he can just react and go to the ball, you know, his speed shows up and his, you know, his hitting ability is there. But I think this will be a big off season for him to really start working through the mental part of the game and learning to read his run fits and things.
Yeah, that's one thing I have to keep reminding myself is like there are so few young players play and so even fewer play well when they're rookies, right? So, I mean, this team should be one that is taking a big step moving forward. I didn't realize when I was talking to Brad for the preview how many guys the Packers had under contract for next season. I think it's something like 45. So you were saying like the 45 plus draft class, like you're already at your 53-man roster. And that's not including a bunch of these guys like Keyshawn Nixon. You probably want Keyshawn Nixon back. Like he's your slot at now, and he's doing a great return. He's doing a great job as a returner.
Rudy Ford. This is another one who's got an expiring contract.
Yeah.
So
I think now we're officially at the point where there's enough mouths to feed that it's like there's no way Alan Lazard's coming back, right?
Yeah.
There's just no way you could fit it in.
With the development that we've seen from Watson this last month, assuming that continues, which it should, hopefully we see Dobbs come back and see how those two guys work together. That it's going to hurt, right? And I don't know who they get to be that edge kind of enforcer guy on the run game from the slot. We know Watson can block. I mean, he's been blocking his butt off. He's been doing it since his days at North Dakota State. But he's not that same type of guy that Lazard is. So I do wonder a little bit about how you replace him in the run game more so than how you replace him in the passing game. He's a nice receiver. He's clearly got Rodgers' trust, and those guys are on the same wavelength. And he's an efficient chain mover, especially like on third downs. Right, he has been for the last 3 years. But I don't think that's something that you can't replace with a Watson or a Dobbs. Once those guys kind of get that chemistry in place. So it's my only question with Lazard is what you do with him in the run game to replace him.
I have a question. So you look at the structure of this team, right? Let's say Sadie's comes back, Tonyan doesn't, Alan Lazard doesn't, right? Your skill guys are, you know, Aaron Jones, Mercedes Lewis, Christian Watson, and Romeo Dobbs. What is more impactful, another receiver, and what does that wide receiver look like, or a tight end who is, you know, that functional wide receiver tight end, that guy who is, you know, that I'm not saying necessarily Kelce, I'm not saying necessarily Darren Waller, but like a guy in that mold who like he will line up outside even though he is technically a quote unquote tight end, because I kind of think it's the tight end.
Yeah,
what is a wide receiver going to bring to the table that Dobbs and Watson already can't do at this point, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, consistency matters, but like in terms of traits, what is the trait? What is the trait?
Yeah, and maybe that's how you do it, right? Maybe that's how you get that guy to fill that Lazard role a little bit, with a little bigger body and a tight end, and you use 12 personnel as your base.
Yeah, I just kept thinking about, because again, I was talking with Brad and he brought up the Darren Waller trade when we were talking about the trade deadline stuff, and Chase Claypool ended up, you know, with the Chicago Bears and stuff. And just, I can't like escape that of like the Packers thought their answer was a tight end. The Packers thought their answer was a tight end, and not just a tight end. It was Darren Waller specifically, but they tried to make that trade so many times that it's like, there has to be something there. Apparently I haven't seen much of this tight end class. Apparently this tight end class is very, very good. Like it's one of the deepest positions in this upcoming draft. So I can't wait to break down some of that tape. It seems like the edge rushers are good too. Quarterbacks not so much, which plays into our Jordan Love thing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's if it's I'll be perfectly happy if this draft is strong at the couple of positions the Packers need most. Now I want to see, all right, how's the safety class? That's the other big one.
Yeah, last year probably was the year to take a safety, unfortunately.
And I was on that train. I was a Daxon Hill guy. Like I was a Tyler was a Jalen Petrie guy. He talked me into Petrie. Petrie's playing well too. He had another pick today.
Brisker, the guy that they brought in from Penn State, he's been playing good until he got hurt for the Bears. Like,
yeah,
there's some good safeties out there. Yeah, what was it? Petrie picked off Deshaun Watson today.
Yep,
if I remember correctly. Yeah,
yeah, that. I don't know. We don't need to get into that too much.
Oh, that sounds like a podcast. Keep it tuned to the site. I think we're going to do some interesting stuff this week. I want to dive deep and read up on all this Brett Favre stuff. I want to figure out exactly what the heck is going on with that. And then I'm going to try to do something for the site about that. We'll see how it ends up turning out. But bye week, baby. Get your relaxation on for the next week or so. So
15 days off, Monday night game, 2 weeks from tomorrow. So should be a good one.
Will Bock play against the Rams is, I guess, the question for the next 15 days.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. We'll have to follow it. I love it.
We'll probably have some mock drafts and stuff up on the site. Probably get some draft stuff going since, there's not going to be much news as far as, Packer stuff. Hopefully no one gets arrested over the bye or anything like that. That's always the nightmare.
I'll definitely put up a rooting guide for the bye week too, to make sure we know who we need to be pulling for this week. Again, assuming we're on the, let's see if we can sneak into the playoffs and make a run train here.
I think as long as the team is treating it that way, I feel like we got to treat it that way. So
yeah, let's do it.
All right, guys, go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.